You're listening to Red Setter, your guide to digital cinema, filmmaking, and cutting-edge imaging.
Hello and welcome to this week's Red Center, episode number 46. I don't know, we're keeping notes, really.
I don't know.
Joined here in the studio, Jason, how are you?
I'm very, very well, very relaxed.
Yes, we actually, before we get into the news and stuff this week, we spent all day yesterday out on a recce for your next short film.
Yeah.
So we'll discuss that in a minute, but
it's good fun.
You're looking a bit, bit of colour on your face, running out in the sun all day. None of this studio shooting crap. We have been to the far corners of the world since we spoke to you last. I've been to several of the corners of the world since we spoke. You've been in Melbourne, though.
Yeah, which is not really in a corner.
It's
a small dark cupboard.
Okay.
With rain in it.
Yes. So we'll be talking about that. We actually have perhaps a short show for you this week. We are predicting a short show, though they always turn out differently. We moved an interview back to next week, which was going to be done, but due to scheduling with the production involved. So that's fine, because we have quite a bit of things we want to discuss and catch up on. I want to thank you guys for all the comments and stuff. Especially, we've been having a lot of activity on the Twitters and stuff, Jace, with people commenting on the show, which is good.
Yeah, love it. Thank you.
Just to reiterate our purpose, as we do every few months or so, the whole point of the show is to discuss digital cinematography, and to that end, we're trying to discuss things that are production-based. We sometimes discuss the post-production processing of those files, but really the focus of the show is on digital cinematography. Obviously a heavy bias to Red, because that's what brought us to this point, but we tried to cover a bunch of things, and I guess of late, two things have been rearing their head quite strongly, Jace. One of them is the imminent arrival of Red's next generation Scarlett and Epic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the other is the actual arrival of the Canon 7D.
The actual arrival, which may even walk through the door as we talk.
So let's start with the news and our discussion about Red. In particular, there are both pictures from IBC that have been filtering on the net and more sort of lusty renderings.
Very lusty renderings, which are looking exactly like the stuff that we've seen in at the IBC pics. But it's really great to see what's obviously has also been coming with these pictures. It's been a lot of digging on the pages from me to try and find little bits and tiny bits of information and piece it all together and get a better idea of what all the little modules mean. So what we've really seen is some really good renders and some pics in the hand of the battery module. This is obviously for Scarlett at the moment, the stuff that's been shown, for Epic rather, that's been in the hand. The I.O. module, the small little flip-out kind of, I guess, which will be, I presume, a touchscreen. Really great renders of the Epic body itself, and lots of nice pictures of the Red Mote, which is starting to sort of get a much better sort of snapshot of all this stuff and how it's all going to fit together and work together. And just, you go off and you kind of sort of forget about it for a while, and you go off and sort of do a job with a Red One or a 5D or something, and you think, that's great, that'll do. And then you see pics like this again, you go, ooh, hurry up. It's always nice to sort of see some of this new stuff. And theoretically, as we've been saying, and as we heard a couple of eps back, this stuff is going to be in people's hands pretty quick, I think.
Yeah, I think the general impression was that people were really glad to see the stuff at IBC, and that the goss is that there is a delay just waiting on ASICs or chips from some third-party supplier into the hands of Red. So, I think Red is as keen as anybody to get them into everybody's hands. I can't see them not being keen to do that.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously, the stepping back a little bit from my understanding to those who may not know what the ASIC is, it's essentially the new part of the Red sort of spectrum, and what we'll start to see with Epic and Scarlett is essentially the brain where the firmware, what has up till now been the firmware, has been sort of burnt on with the Red One. And part of the reason why you have slow boot up times and all that stuff with the Red One, this is now we're entering into an area where the system software is embedded in the ASIC processor, which is essentially like what you're used to with a Canon 5D or any other sort of camera, where you get a really quick boot up time. And the camera runs cooler. There's lots of pluses to go with that, but obviously it's the last piece of the puzzle, but it's going to be something that's going to be worth waiting for. Low or sort of non-existent sort of boot times is going to be an absolute cracker, because, you know, at the moment you kind of almost schedule around them and sort of think twice, I've got to reboot now, I've got to swap this battery over, you know, how do I, you know, you almost got to schedule it like a lens change or any other sort of disruption to the production. So to completely remove that from the equation is going to be fantastic. So it's going to be worth waiting for.
Yeah, I think the promise of the renderings has been realized pretty much with the actuals of the physical held units. In other words, I mean, there is a danger with computer graphics that everything just looks schnick and mick and wonderful.
Yeah.
But we haven't heard any feedback from anyone that, well, look, the renderings look bloody great, but when you actually hold them in your hands, they don't feel very good at all.
Yeah, which everyone's obviously had a chance to do it. Well, IBC, the nuclear football was unlatched, and everyone got to have a chance to see the new bomb EVF and the small LCDs and all the modules in their hand physically, and they look exactly like the renderers. So I guess let's just sort of touch on some of the stuff that's come out. Obviously, the main sort of change will be that they have this much smaller battery design, the red volt system, which really essentially breaks a bigger brick battery down into smaller modules. The idea being that obviously you can now, it's much easier to, you know, to hot swap a battery. You can swap them over. If the battery module essentially carries two of the red volts, four of the red volt batteries equal one of the red brick. One red volt battery lasts between 40 minutes and an hour. So, and four red volt batteries, if you've got a set of four and you're swapping them over, you should be able to work for 3 hours. This is, your results may vary. but obviously, yes, because you can put two into the battery module itself, you can obviously then hot swap. There's no need for extra hot swap adapters. And obviously, this is the same battery, as far as I can understand. This is the same battery. If you buy the smart handle and you just want to have the module bolt onto the smart handle, this will be the same battery that will then fit inside the smart handle. Someone
would ask you about.
Email me or stop me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, something I was going to ask you about, you know, on any shoot, red sheet we're on, and, you know, I'm not talking about documentary now, I'm talking about something professional. It's a mass of wires. You can almost not see the red body for the wires. Do you feel that all of these things
you've
we're
seen
now?
Well, you saw the, I put a few pictures up on Flickr of my last shoot of the red we had, and this was just on hand, handheld, but because I wanted to go wireless, we had to have obviously we had the battery, we had to drive. We had to have a modulus 3000 wireless video transmitter, and cost that standard def. Then we also had to have the Blackmagic Design SDI step down, and all of that stuff needs powering. And you know, if you're after this real small handheld thing, it suddenly starts to get really nuts and cables and points of failure and yeah.
So I guess my question is, do you think that the renderings we're seeing, which are obviously remarkably sans cables, are because they haven't got the cables on there, or because the camera, when actually in the field, will require just a ton less cables than we're used to now?
Yes, I reckon. Well, it is pretty hard to guess, but I mean, obviously, all the modules are interconnecting through. They've got sort of edge connectors in the back there, so each module will talk to itself. When the red moat, when that docks on the back of the module, on the back of the whatever your last module is in the chain, that will that has connections on the back of it, so it will charge itself, because it's obviously got internal batteries. That'll charge off the EPIC body. I think it's safe to say we're going to have a lot less cables. Obviously, you know, I mean theoretically, you're going to be able to put your drives and your batteries all in one body with no connections. It's hard to tell at this stage if the LCDs are going to have cables to them.
I understood that there was a cable to the red site and to the LCDs because of a couple of reasons, but one, because somebody mentioned that they reuse the same cable. So
yeah, and also because you can put them, part of the idea is that you can put the LCD on the top, you can put it on the side for handheld. You know, if you're breaking it right down into a small handholdable sort of size with literally just the body itself and a CF card in the side, you can put the LCD on the top and literally just, you know, use it almost like a little waste finder. So it's certainly going to cut down the cables. The interesting thing will be to see how, I'm sure the guys have well and truly field tested all these edge connectors between from module to module, because that obviously is a you know, it scares me as a point of failure, but cables can be just as bad, I tell you. And they're expensive, you know, Limo Connect, you know, cables are really expensive. You've got to have doubles of everything. It's, you know, it's also, you know, picking it up and putting it on your shoulder, you know, they catch on people's belts and the grips belts and, you catch on your cap and your glasses and they're all over the place. You can sort of trip over and pull them. So, no, I think it's going to make for a much cleaner design. The guys have obviously well and truly, you know, learnt looking at how people have taken their simple camera and built it and stacked and put stuff on top of it. They're definitely going to seen that and learnt that it's can quickly become quite unergonomic.
One thing that I've noticed, and I've literally to catch up, I've been to America and then to Europe and then to Asia since we last recorded, and what I'm noticing going around the world is resurgence, but definitely a heavy adoption of the 16 gig cards as almost the preferred way of shooting again.
Yeah.
It was like everyone was on the 8 gig and then they kind of got over it, went to the drives, and they didn't like some of the issues with the drives. And also, to be frank, it seemed like a long record time wasn't as big a deal as making sure everything was laid off quickly. And so I'm actually noticing a lot of people loving the 16 gig cards, and of course they don't have the same restrictions on speed, so you're not sort of limiting your options.
I suggested, that's interesting. Well, I suggested that to my DP before we started, knowing this whole shoot would be handheld, saying, look, why don't you go 16 gig cards and forget the drive? And she actually said, nope, this is really going to be it's much more balanced with it on, because obviously the drive goes up the back. If you've got it on, say, like the Mantis, the Element Technica Mantis rig, the drive's up the back, and it sort of balances you out. But I don't quite buy that. But
I must admit, we've got a belt clip, and we move the battery off the body when we're going handheld and put that on the waist. That makes a big difference to kind of...
Interestingly, we did have a lot of, about sort of 7 or 8 times during the shoot, had all these drive errors, which I've never seen before. Literally, I'm not really sure. I can't actually remember what the actual error was because I wasn't sort of really involved. All I know they were saying
is, just trying to direct. Well,
yeah, that's right. But they, definitely had to sort of, I'd get the call every few takes. Oh, sort of drive error. Sorry, let's do that take again. So, it's a bit odd. Apparently, it's possibly to do with some power interruption or dodgy power connections through the back of the battery, yeah, the battery mounts.
That's been a big deal.
That has been sort of fixed up in later mounts, and I'm sure this, you know, I'm sure we had the later design, but still, it was certainly made for, you know, a little bit of pain here and there. And we only lost sort of, you know, 5 or 6 takes throughout the day, but
that's a pretty high number.
Yeah, oh, no, not compared to the number of takes. we're doing a heck of a lot of takes. Probably sort of, you know, 70, you know, probably over the day, probably did a couple of hundred takes. So it's probably 7 or 8's pretty good attrition. But still, it's the first time I've seen it. So CF cards, actually, the only thing, we were shooting 50 frames the whole time. Maybe there was an issue with that. So no, we had to go to 3K 50 frames.
The 16 gig cards can handle the higher rates.
Right, okay. Right, well.
Though, I should say, you were commenting to me yesterday separately how much you enjoyed working with that DOP. Maybe you should give her a shout out because.
Absolutely. Yeah, look, that was Bonnie Elliott. I'll try and send you the picture, Mike. Bonnie Elliott. Shout out to Bonnie. She was fantastic. She comes from a documentary background. And obviously, there's plenty of guys that can sort of do that. But what was interesting to see, haven't worked with a lot of guys or girls, obviously, who have done. Have got that doco.
Use of the word guys meaning anyone of any
meaning any anybody.
Yeah.
You guys. But it was nice to having that doco background. Sort of because it was a really quick, rapid sort of shoot, and there wasn't a lot of the time I was off directing kids and, you know, right and up front with the, a lot of the time not even really looking at the monitor. I'm not even able to look at the monitor. I was off right there, right in front of the with the talent, our celebrities and children, and it was just freaking mad. But so what was nice to see that a doco person who you'd almost think would be quite far removed from the term DOP, you know, they're almost our lord, you know, unto themselves, actually almost more embraced the term director of photography than the regular guys. And don't mean to take that away from anybody, but it was interesting that because I guess they're What was interesting, what was nice that she was doing, she was actually just always had that sort of extra eye out, looking for the interesting little angles and bringing up the what ifs. And there was this, we were in the garden and we were shooting this sort of kid, like with a sword, kind of, you know, stabbing the laundry, just, you know, playing with the washing line. And there was this little, someone on one of the bushes, we were just shooting in someone's house, one of the plants in the garden that hung up this little, like a little swing, almost like a little dolly swing. There was nothing on it. And she said, "Ooh, that little, right way over there, there's a bucket of, you know, nights. Why don't we pick up one of those nights and put it on this little swing, give it a little gentle swing in foreground, and you can, in the background..." It wasn't even really that long a conversation. It was just, she went, grabbed the night, put it on, and she swung it and said, "Have a look at this." And I went, "Oh, fantastic." So it was just kind of like, it was almost like if I was that 5% more busy, I wouldn't have even seen that shot. I would have seen it later on rushes. But it was kind of, I don't know, it was nice to have that, essentially almost like having a second director really on set. So it was an interesting to see, because a lot of the times, you know, DOPs, you know, I'm talking about the film sort of higher end sort of film guys,
you mean commercials or
so commercials or films, you know, they come, you've got the storyboard, you've got, you know where you're going to shoot, and a lot of that sort of stuff. Essentially, it's almost like all care, no responsibility. They just kind of turn up. That's all the frames. Yeah, we know what we're going to do. In a way, in commercials land, you sort of get used to the fact that there's so many givens and everything's, you know, the script is as tight as a drum. You can't change the word "at" to a "the." That you can't. I can't do it. The director can't do anything. Nothing. You're walking on set with almost everything locked in, and it becomes this just kind of this process of ticking off frames on the board. And it was really nice to actually sort of step away from that process. And I mean, it was sort of helped by the fact that the budget was probably about $8.50. but we didn't,
including,
you know,
celebrities,
because it was because we'd, from the very get-go, we'd kind of set it up as being, this is a very relaxed shoot. We've got kids that are going to do what they're going to do, and you can't write the kind of stuff that they're going to come up with. So to that point, they said, "Oh, can we do a storyboard?" And I said, "No, let's not do a storyboard, because you're going to get locked into that. And A, you're going to spend your whole day trying to fight to get what we've drawn, when what they're actually doing or what they would have done if we'd left them to their own devices would be much better." So point one, went in with like a crew of three people. Point two, we didn't have a storyboard to tick off, so it was like open slather. Point three, I set it up from the very beginning with Bonnie that I'd love you to be the extra eye. You know, you're a documentary person, do what you do. Otherwise, I might as well go and get, you know, go to Honda and get them to put a camera bracket on the top of Asimo, the walking robot, put a freaking camera on his shoulder, and that'll do. I don't really need, you know, it's that idea of collaborating and having an extra eye, and also walking onto set with the idea that everyone knowing that if there's no board, suddenly everyone sort of steps into this other sort of mindset. And so anyway, Bonnie Elliott.
This is exactly why... Sorry, go on.
Bonnie Elliott, two N's, two E's, two L's, if that makes sense, .com. Great reel. Send me the check, Bonnie.
yes, anyway, this is why I... No, but seriously, this is why I'm so keen to... Because you're doing a directing course this term at FX PhD, and I've been looking forward to it, because
I'm looking
forward to like having these in-depth discussions about how you work with... Because you get great performances out of... the actors and the children that you work with.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
You're really dismissive of it. Like, you're really like Australian kind of, we just point the camera.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, we just turned up with three people and whatever. I mean, you just got that classic Australian self-deprecating humour, but it's amazing to actually watch somebody get great performances versus getting staged blocking.
Yeah. I guess, I mean, it is a little bit easier when you don't have a physical script and boards to tick off, which of course we will when it comes to the short film. We obviously have a lot of givens, but it's kind of like the more you try and control things, the less you actually get, I reckon. So it doesn't happen all the time. A lot of times, you know, you might have, you know, agency and creative people who aren't in for that ride and want to lock it in and walk it. But this is, you know, an agency I've worked with before, and they were on par with the style and we'd sort of...
Can we later ask what the product category was?
I guess it's kind of like Kids Sports Association kind of thing. So I suppose it's like getting kids off their bum and, you know, it's...
So it was very kid-focused and...
Very kid-focused, and we had like a sporting celebrity involved, and so it was... And we had Melbourne weather, like about 10 scenes to do in a day. We lost about first 4 hours of the day due to weather, just sitting there... having cold, stone cold bacon and egg rolls under the KD canopy, waiting for the Melbourne weather to clear. But yeah, we got it all, and I think we pulled out one light for about half an hour, and that was it.
You still managed to get your flight back to Sydney,
yeah,
which is kind of impressive.
And made my flight back to Sydney. No, it was one of those times where actually everything sort of came together. But it's was really nice to see. As I say, I was just wrapped with the idea of actually having a DP who was essentially like a director in arms, I suppose, versus someone who's just sitting there waiting for me to say, okay, what are we doing next, Jason? Being a yes man.
I'm going to say, in fairness, because I know you're not going this way, but in fairness, you were also getting that from a scripted point of view from Tom Gleason yesterday on your recce.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he was being very collaborative.
Absolutely.
Well, I think you're a collaborative director. But.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess you have to... Yeah, I guess with all of that stuff, you have to set it up, and you have to sort of be that person, I guess. You have to be... I guess I'm sort of collaborative. You know, you just have to... That's a really... You have to be the collaborative person. You know, you have to...
You're going to set the tone.
Yeah, but you have to sort of set the tone on. Yeah, you have to set the tone on set that it's okay to come up with stuff. You know, you don't want to be. I mean, obviously a lot of guys are, and that's fine, and that's their style. But I guess I'm.
But on your own film, you're going to be even more. I mean, because literally on this film, no one's going to tell you, unless you invite them. No one's going to tell you anything because you're no longer answering to a client or anyone, right? It's just whatever your vision is.
True. I guess it just comes down to personality that you sort of... You just have
Which
to make,
the question
make
is,
it... Make
do you feel
it.
Like you need to articulate the vision or guide through your actions to get the vision? In other words, do you like to explicitly...
You have. Yes, you don't sort of come in with no idea and everybody help me, please, and you do this...
No, but I mean, do you like to articulate it out loud is what I'm trying to say. Do you literally say, what I'm after is this, 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 and this, and then sit back, or do you kind of...
It's a combination of that and also just steering the style. I think you have to really sort of know where you want to go and have an idea of where to head, but be also open to to the side roads, be open to people that are going to come up with
I'm
what
quoting
ifs,
a, because a discussion that was recounted between George Lucas and Ron Howard where he said, don't tell them everything that you want. Because, talking about a particular department, he said, because you already know what you want, let them give you stuff which maybe builds on what you've got, and if you just define what you want,
yeah,
all you're going to get back is what you defined, whereas if you let people contribute before you articulate it and define it, wow, there may be something there that you hadn't thought of.
Absolutely. You give them a guide or give them a ballpark to head for and the idea of where you're wanting to go, but don't make it say, I want exactly this model of car, don't... You want to have exactly, this is the clothing. Here's all the tear sheets. Boom, just go out and just copy this. This is the scene from the movie I like. I want that entire wardrobe, and that's the hairstyle I want. You want to sort of, you've got these people for a reason. You know, you've hired these people because they have talents in their given field. So collaboration is all about letting them, off the leash a little, but be there to fill back to.
I think
because there's a lot of particularly in the same deal with actors. You can have a complete idea of exactly how the performance is, and almost stand there and be like an idiot director and say, "Just watch me. This is how it should be," and just walk through it. But if you don't do that and you just say, you give them the script, you give them the overview of the scene, and this is the idea, and let them, think on their toes, you can often get. Wow, that is not in any way how I imagine that scene playing, but I just absolutely love it because it has humanity because that person brought their personality to it. So, the less you control, the more you kind of get...
I mean, do your homework by all means, but...
Yes, absolutely. Failure requires absolutely no planning.
Well, I can tell you, I'm really looking forward to this directing course you're going to do, because I'm going to learn a lot, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Look, I'm sure I will as well. It's that classic thing of you never learn as much as when you actually teach someone else. So it'll be, I guess I'll find a lot out about what I do subconsciously.
It's actually true. You kind of sometimes do stuff and then having to articulate it brings it into sharp relief.
Yeah, that's right.
Segwaying from there, though, one of the things we'll be doing, other than shooting with the Red on that project, is also shooting some stuff with the Canon 7D, which has shipped. We should maybe touch on that, because it was pretty exciting, certainly for me, that the 7D shipped. I've got one.
Yeah. Look, absolutely. I mean, I think what you've got at the moment, because the perfect camera isn't there yet, you have your 5D Mark I. For stills and for walk
personally,
around stills,
yeah,
it's a full frame sensor and fantastic. And you've got the 7D, which is obviously going to shoot 24, going to shoot 25, going to shoot 50 frames, going to shoot 60 frames, and be a perfect BC camera, albeit obviously with all the givens of compression and all that sort of stuff. But a perfect second camera for Red work. If you had it, I would have stolen it and taken it down there to Melbourne for me to be a second camera, because it would have fitted in perfectly. Because what we were shooting, we shot everything 50 frames. So, you know, 5D wouldn't have worked for us. I would have had to slow everything down in post and it wouldn't have matched. But, you know, 7D is perfect. Same size sensor, match the frame rate, would have been fabulous. I'm yet to see an awful lot of footage from it, though. I must admit, I haven't seen much of the overcranked stuff at 720p. Have you seen it?
I have seen stuff. I mean, 720p is a hit. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, sure.
But I'm less concerned about that, because like most of the perspective that we've discussed on this, I'm not, you know, trying to make the 7D the camera that replaces the Red. I'm not trying to do that.
No, sure.
I'm trying to make it the camera that, as you said, second units that... So if I was doing high speed, I would definitely be at a Red. And honestly, on a major commercial, I'd be off a Red and onto a Phantom. But you know what? I think that the thing about the 7D is that it does have limitations. Gets you a tremendous amount, but a lot of it, what it gets you actually is the lenses. I mean, it's the Canon lenses in an affordable film bag. It isn't necessarily... I mean, yes, the low-light capability is great, and there's a bunch of stuff that I love about it. But I'm more excited about being able to film through these lenses on an affordable camera back, so I can afford to have that as a second camera. And to that end, I'm actually going to buy a 35mm 1.4
Lovely.
Prime.
Excellent, yeah, which will sort of, I suppose, be close to a 50mm in coverage on the 5.
On the 7D, yeah.
On the 5D.
So the 35 will be a 35 on the 5D, and the 35 will be a 50mm on the 7D.
Yes. I guess I was going the other way. A 35mm on the 7D will look like a 50mm 1.4 on the
5D.
5D.
Yes. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Sorry. Yeah.
So that lens is I mean, I'm sort of more, in terms of lenses, up more the Nikon stuff, because they have obviously the DX and FX systems. So that Canon has a whole bunch of, like, crop sensor only
Canon
lenses.
Canon does have crop sensor lenses. This is not one of them.
No, because obviously the idea is to stick with, if you can, get whatever lens you're buying, even if you've got a crop sensor camera, get the full frame coverage lenses for when 5D Mark III comes out. Or whatever it be, you know.
Yeah.
If
so
you
if you were looking at lenses for the Canon, you'd see that they're an EF lens. So an EF, say 35 f/1.4L, which basically means that it's fully open at 1.4. This 35 lens is said to be slightly soft at 1.4. It hits its sweet spot around 2.8. Having said that, I quite like that subtle softness, because I'm going at that point for a really, really... Well, I think I sent you some stills yesterday from on set.
Yes, of the from the 5D.
I did a test on the 5D between just a 5.6 kind of, you know, exposure, and then with ND going to a 1.4 on the same shot. And just to give you guys some perspective, and this is all going to be covered, of course, in Jason's directing course, but we have a reason to shoot things that are 4 inches high. We want to have a very big, shallow depth of field to make them look really yummy.
Yeah.
And it was just such an artistically dramatic difference. I mean, I know you know it. I couldn't still help emailing it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
It was such an... And so the fact that it's a little soft at 1.4, I don't give a rat's. I like that. I think such, to be quite frank, sharpness is overrated. In this area, once we're at this standard, you know, you can obsess about sharpness. Whoever said that being razor sharp is the be-all and end-all, you know what I mean?
And there's something about the interesting thing, when you've got the shallow depth, the outer focus makes the sharp stuff seem all the sharper. Maybe that's just psychology, I guess.
Well, but, maybe it is, but it's true.
And if you've got a classic portrait of someone, a lot of the time the corners are in the background. The bit that's, you know, the bit that you're interested in, usually in focus, is the bit in the middle of the frame. Yeah. But, I'm sure it'll be...
Also, as you know, because it's a cropped sensor, theoretically any edge sharpness issues on the 35 when perceived or registered on the 5D are cropped out.
Yeah,
we're literally
yeah.
taking the sweet spot out of the middle of the lens. So yeah. I have no concerns about it whatsoever. It's not a particularly new lens. It was December 98. But, I was going back to the numbering system. So anyway, 35 f1.4. And then it's the L series. The L series standing for luxury, denoted normally by a red ring on those lenses.
Right.
There are really nice things that are like the 51.4,
yeah.
which aren't the L series. They're still a great lens. And I
use
one.
Yeah, absolutely.
You'd have to go to the 1.2 and the 50 to get the L series. But you just get that great build quality. Speaking of which, segueing slightly, but have you played with the red primes?
No.
Noticed a bit of a build quality issue myself with the 100mm. We were shooting with them in London. We were shooting full set of red primes. It seemed sharp. It seemed good. It just didn't have quite the build quality I was expecting on the 100. I've heard a tale that the slightly different machining on some of the PL mounts. So some PMLs...
From lens to lens and from kit to kit. From kit to kit, I've heard.
Yeah, I've heard that as well.
Definitely. Because there's definitely... I mean, obviously, the one thing that is obviously most consistent with the lenses is the back... If you're imagining a PL mount, the back... Obviously, the most critical part is the back part of the flange, I guess. Because obviously, that's what...
That defines
how far it sits into the camera.
Mm-hmm.
The tricky bits often, and you sometimes, especially when with director's viewfinders or anything that's not necessarily ever so critical, be it a collimator or a projector or something like that, the locking ring is often where you have the issue, because sometimes the tolerances are in the thickness of that flange. Am I painting an excellent mental picture?
No, exactly what you're saying. Yeah,
that sometimes it only needs to be like a quarter of a millionth of a millimeter too thick, and then you sometimes can't lock. Not so much nowadays. Oh, it's actually, what actually happens with is there's also PL adapters. Have you seen those?
Yep.
It's like the older sort of bayonet 35mm lenses, and they went. You can put a PL adapter that screws on the back. Sometimes those flanges can be all over the place. Usually third-party stuff, but now we're starting to, particularly with the red primes, we've seen it creep in that one set will fit beautifully. Both sets will fit fabulously on the red one, but one set will fit great on, say, a third-party bit of gear a director's viewfinder or a lens or a projector, and the other kit won't. So... Yeah, it's sort of, and you're interesting the notes about the build quality. You get what you pay for. They're fabulous.
They're really, really sharp.
Sharp. Yeah.
Having just said I don't care about sharpness, they were sharp.
Yeah.
And you're right, for the price, magnificent.
I'm imagining that, maybe they've been all built from the ground up, but I'm imagining they're rehoused. I mean, they don't take old lenses from the second-hand shop, but the rehoused stills lenses.
A reworking of a stills design. Because a lot of those optics stuff was worked out.
Yeah, which means which is nothing against them. The optics on stills lenses are often worked to better tolerances than some cine lenses.
Yeah, I mean, I do think the point we've made many times, and I totally just wanted to underline it with yesterday's test. Off-the-shelf 7D that comes with a packaged zoom lens that's going to be a 4-something to 5.6.
Yeah.
I mean, the difference between that and a 2.8, but even down to 1.4, I mean, the difference between 1.4 and 2.8 is two whole stops. It's a huge diff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's only half a stop to 1.2, and I have argued in the past that maybe you don't need to spend $1,000 to buy half a stop, but you bloody well...
It does make a big difference.
A couple of stops, man, that is worth the money.
Well, particularly when you see, you look at the sort of classic kind of, kit lens particularly kit zooms, which, you know, are like 4.5 or whatever, up to 5.6 or 6.3 or some ridiculous stuff.
I mean, I'm holding a Canon one here now. This is a kit lens. Well, I say it's a kit lens. It just came with the camera. It's a 28 to 135.
Yeah.
And it's exactly that. It's 4.1?
3 point something. What is it?
3 point, what are you talking about?
No, no. You were talking about the iris.
Oh, I was just going to say, no, it's a 4.5 to 5.6.
Right, yeah.
And its build quality isn't everything that you want it to be. In fact, after a year or two's use, the zoom actually kind of unwinds if you hold it upside down. It
gets a bit loose.
Bit loose.
Droop.
But I used it in the early days when I was just, you know, waiting and lusting after my bigger zoom, which was 70 to 200, and I couldn't afford both at the same time. So, you know, it's useful for 6 months.
And absolutely, they're fine. And, you know, I
wouldn't use it again.
Yeah, no, I've just bought for my daughter, because she's really getting into photography, a Canon D60, and she's got, you know, the standard kit lens, which is exactly those kind of, you know, it's like the equivalent of essentially, it's probably what, 28 to 85 kind of thing. It's those similar f-stops, but yeah, you can definitely tell the difference. You've got a crop sensor, and then on top of that, you're working with lenses that just can't work wide open.
And now I'm going to segue from there into something else I wanted to...
It's going to be one of those eps.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those eps. Because I'm very proud of this fact. One of the people we were sitting down with in London was Greg Williams, who, as you know, did the Vanity Fair stuff. He's the only man I know to have shot with the Mysterium.
Yes,
exactly. It's not actually an Epic. It's a red one with the next generation sensor in it.
Right.
Nevertheless, we can't talk about that at all yet, because we will. Can't yet.
Okay.
But what I was going to say about Greg, great guy, is that I was very chuffed when he said he just had a set of primes, of course, in his case, all the L-series, that he used. Because I was sitting there in my bag. I had, as you know, the 20, the 50, and the 100 as my standard kit. That's all I took with me around the world. I'll now include the 35 in that. But, it was just this idea that I don't know why people are so obsessed with zoom lenses. Like, I understand the convenience. And if you're not doing serious photography, my wife would just... not for a second consider anything else but a zoom. But, you know, I think we just forget how marvelous, how much it amplifies your photography and your creative talent when you can get some really nice primes. And they don't have to be vastly expensive. Yeah. And, oh, my God, it's just so, so wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, particularly, you know, for the shoot and for handheld, when you look at cine lenses, you don't have any other option other than, you know, obviously... shooting on the shoulder with a red one is the equivalent of just walking around with walking around with a camera around your around your neck, you know, the cine lens equivalent of that. There's apart from some really short zooms, like sort of good stuff for, you know, really small sort of ranges from like sort of 20 mil to 35 or something. There is no real zoom solutions for handheld work and being able to be quick and mobile. But the plus is that you are mobile. You know, it's nicer just make that one step in, and then you can still stay wide and stay wide open. And that was another fantastic thing that Bonnie did. I said very first beginning, I said, you know, obviously what we want to do is let's work wide open, let's stay there. You know, if I look over and see you're, you know, on T4 or whatever, I'll give you a kick.
Aperture priority.
Yeah, exactly right. So, you know, obviously it's a lot harder when you're sort of on the run and the sun's coming in and, you know, sun's going up and down. But she was right onto it and the pictures looked fantastic.
You know, the other thing that I want to throw in there, obviously, again, like we've been talking about with sharpness, a lot of stuff gets focused on noise, like, you know, how noisy is the picture. And I'm the first to say that I'm looking forward to, you know, really... using the 7D's low light capabilities. But having said that, I think also you can get a little obsessed with noise. And again, not that I can talk about much, but a point just in passing, Greg said, you know, it's not like a noise-free picture is necessarily a better picture. You know, in the same way that quite often...
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and this is all public knowledge. Greg's done covers of Italian Vogue and stuff, and there are photos there that aren't 100% in focus, in the sense that they're artistically out of focus, not they're a mistake.
Yeah.
Look magnificent. I don't think the picture would have improved had it not had some blur from the person that was moving through shot, and it had been razor sharp because he'd gone for a 2000th ISO. It would have lost the character of the shot. And so none of these technical things need to be the thing that drives you creatively. It just should be the thing that you know about and you work in the picture, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I mean, you've got to go really looking for trouble to sort of see noise these days. I think even Red One and, you know, 5D and 7D, which is meant to be a little bit noisier than the 5D.
But again, I think it could really be a splitting hairs problem. Certainly from my point of view, personally, not the company now, my personal camera being the 5D Mark I is going to be a vast step up, right?
Yeah.
Although the splitting hairs are between the 5D Mark II, which obviously we use, but I don't personally own, and the 7D. But look, I really think... I don't hold with this theory that you could take the best photos in the world with an iPhone because it's all about the art and nothing about the gear. I think the gear makes a big friggin' difference.
Yeah, but absolutely. You just got to strike that balance. It's nice to start with the good gear to begin with, but
if you produce pictures that are razor sharp, without any grain, and without any noise, and without any blur, you may not be producing good photography. Those things don't make a great photo. Composition makes great photos.
And
light, storytelling.
Yep. Absolutely, it's all about and yeah, absolutely. The best. I'll show you the shot. Sorry, this is terrific for radio.
I like how you refer to us as doing radio.
Yeah, sorry. There's some kid hitting pinata. You know, it just happens to be great expression. Bang. You know, just motion blur. And I think that's Canon G10 or whatever. So it's, you know, we had 5Ds. I had Red and everything, but that just was, you know, just it's. Doesn't really matter. It just happened to be taking the photo at the right time and, you know, having the camera in your hand at that time. And it was, so.
One of the things that I'm looking forward to with Scarlett and stuff, which I think is yet to be determined, is how much the general public will perceive that I'm filming with a film camera or not. Because one of the other things I was on that trip, I was at one stage talking to the Hispanic advertising community in Miami. And one of the things that they particularly wanted and were interested in was a discussion about the 5D, because going down into El Salvador or to Puerto Rico or some of the other areas, they felt that it could be significantly beneficial to not be looking like you're filming on a film camera but filming on a 5D or whatever.
Yeah.
I wonder whether people will perceive the Scarlett as a video camera or a stills camera, because actually it's got nothing to do with technical specs and everything to do with just how the audience looks. Or the security guards perceive you.
How it looks. I mean, I think with the Scarlett with the smart handle on and you know, maybe an LCD tucked somewhere on the back, not the big, huge bomb EVF and not all, you know, because you talk about, obviously, with your the DP course you did recently with Jim Ashwitz, being in, trying to shoot at, you know, the major intersection in Tokyo and being able to sit there with a 5D and get some shots off. And as soon as you pull out even the smallest, simplest, whatever, HVX 200 kind of size camera, you get, you know, the tap on the shoulder within about 5 minutes. And
you know what? I'll amplify that. It was Stu not only shot the intersection, he shot everyone in the Starbucks. And no one bothered him. And John pulled out the P2 and didn't get a single shot off. It wasn't 5 minutes they shut us down. It was within seconds.
Yeah. Like, I think the first time I actually ever played with the 5D doing filming-wise, I had the 70-200 and I was sitting at the airport cafe right by departures waiting for, you know, a plane to leave, a delayed flight. And I just sat there and I thought, oh, this is cool. Oh, let's just do some tests. Oh, wow, this is fun. I was right there. You know, literally, if I pan my camera 5 meters to the left, I could see about 5 security guards. If I pan my camera about five feet to the right, I could see 10 signs saying, do not, you know, no filming in this area. And I just sitting there in the coffee shop and just could happily, you know, I happily filmed for, you know, an hour of people, you know, kissing, you know, heartfelt kissing goodbyes and hellos and departures. It was you know, quite fantastic. And part of it, as you say, is because I did not look like I didn't have my eye to the camera. So half the time I'm looking like I'm chimping and looking at the back of the camera, reviewing shots exactly. Right. So yeah, look, I mean, I'm definitely, it's going to be fantastic. The smaller form factor of, you know, if you go in. There's no way you can be able to sort of film in areas like that, or as you say, in South America, or in the busy intersections of Tokyo. You're just not. There's no way you're going to pull out a camera like the, you know, the current Red One, without you know. And these are areas where you can't get permits. It's not like, you know, you're trying to cheat the system. This is areas where it's just impossible. you know, you just get a flat no. If you want to shoot there, you have to do stealth. You have to sort of do, you know, go do the left field technique. So
yeah,
shooting
yeah.
in something, being able to get away with it like you can with the 5D, but have the quality of the Scarlett's going to be bloody awesome.
Yeah. Hey, interestingly, the 1D Mark IV rumors continuing to surface that they'll be shooting in a RAW format. Of course, the ARRI we talked about last week, the D21 successor, having a ARRI RAW format.
Yeah.
Do you think it's game over if...
Is that what the D4, the 1DS Mark IV is going to be RAW? Video
to RAW is the rumor. Now,
right,
that's... Yeah. We don't normally talk about rumors, but I use it just as a point of discussion.
Yeah.
I mean, is that... If you had to say, what would you most want... Like, let's say next week, we go on set.
Yeah.
I'm rocking up with this 7D to put over to second unit.
Yeah.
If we were to turn up at the next shoot after that, what's the one thing you'd be looking at from that 7D to make it, God, this is so much better than the time we shot last time with the 7D?
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, obviously, the resolution apart, if you could say the 7D shot, well, say if you're shooting 25 frames, you're shooting 1080p, that's terrific, fantastic, two ticks, I've got control of my shutter speed, I've got manual control of all my, white balance and exposure and shutter speeds, and I can shoot 24 frames a second, I can shoot 1080p. Yep, the last pretty much the piece of the puzzle is that look that the 5D bakes into it, and getting around that and having the grading control. That I mean, obviously the 5D is fantastic low light camera. You shoot stills no light camera. It's yeah. fantastic, but obviously once you get into the video arena and you obviously there's compression on top of that. You know, essentially shooting a moving JPEG. It does break down reasonably. Even yeah. in bright sunlight, if you've got an underexposed area in bright sunlight, the dark patches can sort of break down quite quickly. So,
if I was a rich man, and I'm not,
yeah,
what I'd love, well, okay, to be, maybe before I answer that, yeah, I totally agree with you. And related to that, of course, it's just latitude.
Yeah.
As part of the RAW, we expect to get more latitude, which gives us more grading opportunity. If I was a rich man, what I want now, which I obviously can't justify, is getting like a 7D and or something and IR modifying it. I would love to have an IR sensor in those suckers and be able to film infrared digitally on a handheld.
Yeah, don't get me started. I'd just absolutely...
Wouldn't you?
Absolutely love...
If I was a rental house, infrared. I would do that. I would buy six 7Ds and take one of them and hack it.
It's extremely niche, for sure. But, absolutely.
If you had a 7D in any major market, or 5D for that matter, that shot infrared, I think you would rent it. I do think you'd rent it.
Yeah. But coming back to the ideal camera, which is why I don't physically have a camera apart from, you know, G10s
and stuff
that I'm going to lend from you, is because I know that for my next photography, my next taking photos camera, specifying this for taking stills, it has to be full frame. I just absolutely loved the photos I took when I had a 5D for a couple of days. Just loved it. It made photography fun again. It was fabulous to wander around and actually, because something, you know, your kids get a little bit older and then, you know, you sort of kind of stop taking the pictures and you stop taking videos and things, and it's nice to have something make it fun again and make you want to sort of take pictures. I think when I look back at the photo album, there's going to be this sort of gap there where you kind of go, yeah, I've got enough photos of your kids. You know, it's going to be...
The teen years.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, for a couple of days, there was like 5,000 photos taken because Jace borrowed a camera for the weekend, 5D for the weekend.
And then you're going to have at some point, not now, some point, grandchildren, and then you'll be like 5,000 again.
Absolutely. Hopefully not too distant future. Full frame for
Speaking
the stills
of the
camera.
Of daughters, I hope it's a very long time away.
Absolutely.
But anyway, go.
Absolutely. Definitely the next stills camera has to be full frame. But I don't want to buy something now and miss out on the opportunity to have the camera to have, because all the stuff that I, you know, for these shoots or for anything for work, I think I'm probably going to be just renting whatever the right, even if it's even whatever it is, whatever it's going to be in the future, I'm probably going to rent it. but I just don't want to miss out on the opportunity of buying the camera I want to have the ability to have to do, you know, to shoot video with a nice full-frame image or close to full-frame image, and so that I can do, you know, animatics or tests or, like we were wandering around yesterday for the recce. The 7D would have been absolutely perfect for that because we were basically just – we all had different stills cameras and we're all just guessing what side, what lens is this going to be here. We didn't have a body with us. We didn't have a red with us. And we're shooting – the short film will be shot on anamorphics. So we're all just kind of – now let's see. What the widest shot's going to be 28mm, but then we're shooting three
– I mean, they make brilliant director's viewfinders, right?
Yeah. It was, I mean, they're recordable. The 7D is going to be absolutely – because essentially what I did like about when I had my D200 was it was the perfect director's viewfinder because essentially I could frame up a shot and know that because the sensor on the APS-C essentially with the Nikons and the Canons is near enough as damn it the same size sensor as Red One mm-hmm. and motion picture, you know, 35mm cine film, so I could essentially, you know, look down and look at the lens and go, okay, I'm on an 18mm here. I only need to order an 18mm lens, save myself some money. I can essentially guess what my widest lens needs to be in the kit. Now I've sort of haven't got, you know, I've lost that ability because I don't have a camera at the moment. It's I was using this, wandering around with this G10. I could take great shots and take wide shots in 16x9, but then as soon as I wanted to do, now how about I'll show you this camera move, swap it over to video mode, and I'm shooting 4:3 and standard def, and I couldn't really, and we never really knew what lens we were walking with. So it'd be the 7D will be absolutely perfect. Walk around, recce, director's viewfinder, and then you can sort of pop over and shoot the move that you want to, shoot it, play it back, and know that, you know, you're not shooting on a completely different on a lens that, you know, you physically can't rent. You're shooting on you know exactly what your lens is going to be for that move, and then you can pop back and start shooting stills. So, So anyway, back to the camera for me. There isn't one.
I mean, the perfect camera for me is the camera I have with me, and to that end, I always take a camera with me, and so I'm always taking. In my backpack, as you know, I've got a backpack that has a laptop 15-inch, and at the bottom front it holds my Canon 5D and a couple of prime lenses, and then above that is a space for me stuffing all the other crap that I wander around the universe with. And so I totally rely on having a camera. Something will happen and I'll even see a sunset and I'll just pull out the camera. The question is going to be whether I take the 5D or the 7D 6 months from now. I'm nervous that what will happen is I'll just rely on the 7D, because even though I prefer the 5D, as you say, for that,
yeah,
I'll only pull it out on visual effects type shoots where I need the 180 degree fisheye and the extra texture density. And
I reckon you're going to really love it for filming, you're going to love it for shooting, for testing, for director's viewfinder kind of stuff like that. You're going to love it on set and all that sort of stuff. I reckon every time you take a stills photo of it, you're going to go, this would have been nice as a full frame shot.
Well,
with that little less bit more depth of,
yeah. You know, right. Well, we will check in on that, further down the track.
That's my guess. But having said that, as soon as it's here, I'm desperate to have a play and drag it out on set. And as I say, the idea is to use it as second, third unit or rig camera or something, and pop a couple of shots off on the short film and cut it in
and see what you think. Yeah,
absolutely.
Hey, I did want to also flag, you, I think, wanted to talk about the XL Films new system limit.
Yep. Look, I just keep forgetting about these guys because they are tirelessly in the background every time Red updates their firmware and the build. The guys at XL Films, who we've spoken to before, will go and update their fantastic PDF menu guide. For those, if you don't have a camera in front of you, or if you've got to check, can we do this? What are the options in this menu? It's a fabulous laid out in sort of, you know, very sort of great flow chart way, and it's pages and pages. You know, it's 4 or 5 pages long PDF, brilliantly mapped out. Menu guide, completely free from their website, xlfilms.tv, and thank you guys.
.tv, not .com, as I always forget.
Right, but so the build 20 chart is out, which, as obviously the firmware for the cameras is out. So Yeah, it's a brilliant resource, and thanks, guys, for doing it for nothing. So really appreciate it. I know I've sort of referred to it occasionally, and I'm director, so it'd be fantastic for, you know, guys and for assistants and first ACs to have in your bag.
I mean, if you're renting the camera, I think it's worth just printing it out, laminating it, and sticking it in the box, so some young assistant can just grab it and look at it while they're sitting around wondering why.
Yeah,
rolling it.
Absolutely, because you don't have, you know, the menu is not laid out like this for you with the camera. Obviously, you don't know where do I know what I want to do, but where do I?
I've got to tell you,
where do I
even
find
the
it?
Most diehard Red owners?
Yeah.
Occasionally, you go, hey, can we just swap the or enable channel 4 in audio or something? And they'll be like, oh, I don't normally shoot audio. Audio.
It's almost if you rent out your Red, or you know, other people use it, this is absolutely probably must to. Avoid those midnight phone calls from the camera assistant who realise he doesn't actually know what he's doing the night before the shoot, or at 7 o'clock in the morning, the dawn shoot, and he's trying to work out how do I go to widescreen, 3K, blah, 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 and very speed mode, and what's just the shutter? How do I do the shutter syncing? And anyway, so...
I just want to also... Actually, I want to give you a shout-out, unusually. Do you remember years ago on the show, you recommended the Helios for your phone?
Yes, and... Yes,
dude,
go ahead. Yep, you
dude.
Go ahead.
Oh, my God. I was shooting...
It's good that you're doing a shout-out, because I promised to do it. The guys sent me... I've got a copy of the software from the guys, and I definitely have been meaning to do a review of it. But as you know, I've busted my phone, and I'm waiting for a 3GS that has the compass in it. Yeah.
Okay, so let me just say this. I've for FXPHD, I decided to do a whole lot of time-lapse photography around
right.
the world.
Perfect.
I've done Tokyo... Miami, London, Singapore, all these places. I did the Formula One Grand Prix. And there's nothing I like more when I'm jet-lagged to use the jet lag to my advantage. Because if you know me, you'll know that my, you know, I'm post, right? We get out of bed at 10. So I'm jet-lagged. I'm going to get out of bed at 4. What am I going to do? I know, let's take a sunrise over Miami.
Right.
But of course, in Miami, I have no friggin' idea, because I flew in the night before, where the sun's coming up. I have no which way is up, yet alone which way is west.
Yeah.
So this... Helios stuff is great. Not only that, you don't actually have to be connected to the net, which was another thing that really I was incredibly into. Once you've got
right,
it connected,
yes, right.
because you can actually, I mean, you can say, here I am, hit the GPS button. You tell me where in the world you think I am. But you can also just dial up a city. So
yeah.
if I wasn't in Miami yet, I could dial up. No, but I literally would press the button. It would say, I come in Miami. I'd press another button, which is the compass button, and it would orientate me.
That's the bit I don't have at the moment, because I've just got the regular 3G.
Oh,
but
it is so
yeah.
it is so magnificent. And so you're just standing on a balcony, and it's 11 o'clock at night. You know you're going to go to bed, and no matter how tired you are, you're still going to wake up 4 hours later. And then you're going to want to set up your stills camera so you
yep.
can do a nice time lapse. And the whole point of a stills sunrise is you have to get it going before the dawn sun appears, because it's the pre-dawn light that I find to be some of the prettiest. And so I'd go, right, there it is. That's exactly where the sun's coming up at this day, at this exact GPS location, at this, you know...
Yeah, no, it's terrific.
Camera, compass setting. And it is just brilliant. I don't know how much
and
it costs.
And it's just beautiful. It is a little bit expensive, maybe $20 or $30, I'm trying
is
to think.
Is that expensive now? I guess it is.
But, hey, it's not expensive how we used to, you know, compared to what we used to. I sort of thought, oh, well, okay, another sun prediction app. You know, whatever.
No.
But I've used it.
God.
I've used it almost on every shoot. I used to carry around I've got the Sunto Twin, which you've had to play with. You know, the inclinometer
yeah.
and compass in one, and another compass in my bag, and the still fabulous. I'm trying to think of the sun prediction app where you can actually do it on your Mac and you can sort of print out.
I know,
that's great. But this is I had this with me when I went to Fiji, and we literally arrived at like 9 o'clock at night. And we had to shoot a sunset the next morning on the beach. And you know, if you're in your hometown, you kind of go, oh, we're north. Okay, yeah, sun's going to come up there. And, you know, it's what time of year is it? Okay. You know exactly roughly where the sun, you know, where the sun's going to be. But it was terrific with that in one thing, to stand on the beach, you know exactly where the sun's going to come up for that particular location for
when?
That particular day.
Exactly.
You know,
and to have that compass and just an inclinometer to say, okay, the sun's going to be behind that building. When will it crack the top of the building? Because I got to say, one of the things I was doing for this PhD class is I was doing both automated and manual time lapse. And I thought, well, manual is, you know, it's a good thing to show you don't have to have expensive kit.
Right.
And so one of these, I said, I'm just going to stand here and just count to five, click the button, count to five, click to the button, right? Well, I don't want to stand outside for an excessive amount of time clicking a button if I like miscalculate things by 20 minutes because like it's really, really, really boring.
Yeah.
So I would be like, when is it going to crack that building? I'd know, okay, 5 minutes before that. I know the height of that from the inclinometer in the iPhone. It uses, like the iPhone is the perfect thing.
Yeah. I mean, and now the compass is in there. It is absolutely brilliant because it literally.
I asked on Twitter what everyone reckoned and everyone came back and said this. And then I went, well, I remember Jace had that in the show notes.
Yeah.
Looked up the show notes, and this is all, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning. Downloaded it to my phone, stood there with my 3GS, and just fell in love. So, you know.
Yep. So, yeah, absolutely. It's I'm from my memory, the guys that do the developers, I think it's chemicalwedding.tv.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, right, okay.
And they have something new coming out as well.
They do. Are they the guys that do the Hitchcock?
No, there's some.
Thing.
I know there's something new coming from them because I remember thinking when I saw them, if they were the guys that made this app, I would buy anything that they made.
Yeah.
And that's saying something.
The Director's Viewfinder thing they've got.
That's it. It's Director's Viewfinder. So
it's Artemis Director's Viewfinder, so you can take a shot.
Preview lenses.
Yeah. Coming soon.
Now, I wonder if that's going to be... It's $29. Sorry, the sun positioning thing is $29. Best
right.
$29.
Yeah, no, it's terrific.
You can spend if you are, you know, if you're serious. Like, I mean, if you're doing proper work, like you're listening to this podcast,
and it's
you are.
It's beautifully designed.
It is. You
it
don't
is
need...
a beautiful piece. It's a, should win awards alone just by, you know, the gorgeous, the look of the thing. But yeah, the go to chemicalwedding.tv / Artemis and you'll see their, they're coming soon. It looks interesting. Direct
and while we're on that front, I'm just now, as I speak, giving these guys 5 stars rating on the iTunes. If any of you happen to wander over to the Red Center page on iTunes and want to give us a couple of stars, that would be most welcome. Only if you feel...
Particularly if you're in Australia. I think we don't think we've actually ever had... Because obviously those comments are only for the particular...
The region that you're in,
The region you're in. So I don't think we've had any Australians swing by. Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you... primarily stay on the Australian
site, yes,
because you're buying Australian.
That's right, yeah, because I only have an Australian credit card.
Yes, but as I get paid in American dollars,
yeah, you can. Yeah.
I live in
Anyway, so I'll put links to those guys. Thank you to Chemical Wedding and Mr. Toby Everts for sending me the app. That was terrific. As I say, saved my ass a couple of times and saved me from carrying 3 or 4 or 5 things out of my bag when one thing, which I always going to have with me anyway, will do the trick. That's the thing. You know, it's always with you. That's another thing about, you know, I guess where iPhone camera is, you know,
so
very
right,
occasional. It's the camera you know you're going to have with you. So... yeah, no.
You'd be glad to know on the American site we have 9 ratings and
excellent.
We have 5 stars.
Only do a rating if you're actually going to leave something nice, of course. If you're thinking of something other than that, then you can just...
But I'd just be, yeah. But
yeah.
What freaks me slightly, right, is that one of the listeners who also subscribed to this podcast also subscribed to ProLost TV. Now, I think it's great that people would subscribe to ProLost. It's profoundly great that they're subscribing to ProLost. I don't think... that Stu has actually posted anything since about April 2008.
Sure. He's a busy man.
But nevertheless, I think it's pretty funny. Anyway, so that's it for this week. Have I missed anything?
I don't really think so. I mean...
We need to go to a pre-production meeting anyway. We're at the hour mark. We've rambled a bit, but that's just the nature of this week's show. We bought ourselves an extra 20 minutes by losing an interview. Can I just clarify something for people that have asked? We put the show notes in the RSS feed, got complaints from Zoom users, and have taken them out, I think, of the...
No, I believe there's a fix, and we're now doing Zoom and doing RSS feed.
But I'm willing to bet there's only 3 or maybe 30, some number like that, Zoom listeners out there. So if you're one of the Zoom listeners, you owe John Montgomery a beer, because he's been working hard to just... support Zoom listeners, which I'm sure there aren't that many of you.
No.
But that's how much John cares. So thank you, John, for that. We appreciate it. Not that you haven't got better things to do. We don't totally know that. But anyway, yeah. Okay. Until next time, thank you so much, Jace.
Thanks, mate. See you soon.
And we'll report to you what it was like from the shoot. If you want to check out what's going on with that shoot or Jason's directing course, please head over to fxphd.com. where the October term is just starting.
Yeah.
That was the place where last time we did the SLR course with Stu. And as I say, this time you're replacing Stu with directing, which is just terrific, and I can't be more proud of that fact. Thank you guys so much for listening, and again, if you get a chance, pop over to the iTunes store, that'd be great. Until next time, I'm Mike Seymour.
I'm Jason Wingrove. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions or comments, please email us red@fxguide.com. Copyright 2009, FX Guide, LLC.